Right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving headfirst into a Supreme Court case that I think really illuminates the ongoing push and pull between labor law and you know all of this technological change that's happening. It's NLRB, International Longshoremen's Association, mm-hmm. back in 1980. And you know, if you're a law student out there, especially if you're wrestling with how the legal system tries to make sense of this world where technology is constantly, you know, turning things upside down, this case is, it's a must study.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This case is a real classic showdown, right? You've got a union, they're fighting tooth and nail to protect their members' jobs, you know, in the face of this, like, massive technological earthquake. And then you've got the NLRA, the National Labor Relations Act, kind of coming in and saying, hold on, here are the rules, this is what you can and cannot do, especially when you're talking about, you know, preserving work and navigating those tricky secondary boycott issues.
Right, right.
And it's not just some like, dusty legal precedent, right? It really gets to this fundamental question of how do workers adapt and how does the law respond when the very nature of work itself is changing?
Yeah, absolutely. And for you, the learner, I mean, whether you're deep in the weeds of labor law or just trying to get a grasp on the forces that are shaping, you know, the whole economy, this case is like a real world example. It takes these big, sometimes abstract legal ideas and it grounds them in something concrete, like the shipping industry in the 1970s. So what exactly was this like game changing technology that kind of set the stage for this whole legal battle? I mean, this is the part that really fascinates me.
Okay, so the magic word here is containerization.
Ah yes, containerization.
Yeah, right. So picture this. Before the 1970s, most cargo, it was loaded and unloaded piece by piece by longshoremen. I mean, imagine the docks, right? Just a flurry of activity, individual items, crates, sacks, everything handled manually, and then boom, along come these standardized metal boxes, these huge containers. Suddenly, cargo could be packed up, sealed tight, miles away from the port. You know, and then just moved on and off the ships with this specialized equipment. It's like the shipping equivalent of those Lego blocks, you know, just snapping them together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the efficiency gains must have been just unbelievable. But I imagine the impact on those traditional longshoremen jobs, that must have been pretty huge too, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all of a sudden there's so much less need for that manual labor right there on the docks.
Right, right.
And so naturally, the International Longshoremen's Association, the ILA, they saw this as a direct threat to their members' livelihoods. I mean, their whole world is changing. So their response, it was pretty proactive. They negotiated what they called the rules on containers into their collective bargaining agreements.
Rules on containers, aren't
they? And the key part of these rules, it was this requirement that the stuffing and stripping, that's the packing and unpacking of the containers, right, had to be done by ILA labor right there at the piers. And this applied specifically to containers that were handled by consolidators, you know, those companies that gather up smaller shipments into full container loads, and by truckers.
Oh, okay. So let me make sure I understand this.
Sure.
So if a company, let's say they're consolidating all these different goods into a container, but they're doing it at their own warehouse, you know, miles away from the port, the ILA's rules could basically step in and say, nope, hold on. If that container is going on a ship that's being handled by our members, you got to open it up at the pier, and our guys, they're going to repack it.
Yeah,
it's almost like they're trying to create more work, right? I mean, it's a pretty direct way to try to maintain those work hours.
Yeah, you could see it that way. From the union's perspective, it was all about preserving their core function, their role in handling cargo that's connected to maritime transport, you know, the ships.
Yeah.
But the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, they looked at this and they said, hold on a second, you know, they argued that these rules on containers, they weren't a legitimate effort to hold on to work that the longshoremen had traditionally done. They saw it as this illegal move to grab new work that had always been performed by those consolidators and the truckers, you know, at their own locations away from the pier.
Hmm. Yeah. So this is where the whole National Labor Relations Act, the NLR, this is where it really comes into play.
Yeah.
Can you remind us which specific parts of the act the NLRB thought were being broken here? Like, what were they really concerned about?
Yeah, sure. So the NLRB, they were really focused on two sections, Section 8E and then Section 8B of the NLRA.
All right. So two sections. Okay.
Yeah. Think of Section 8E as the hot cargo provision. It basically says that an employer, they can't agree with a union to stop doing business with another employer. So the NLRB, they were worried that these shipping companies, by agreeing to the ILR's rules on containers, they were essentially being forced to cut ties with those off-pier consolidators and truckers, you know, for that container work.
Okay, I see. So it's like, it's about the shipping companies being pressured to say, hey, consolidators, truckers, we can't work with you anymore because of this agreement with the union.
Right, exactly. And then you've got Section 8B. That one deals with secondary boycotts.
Okay, secondary boycotts.
Right. It says a union, they can't put the squeeze on one employer, like let's say the shipping company, with the aim of getting them to stop doing business with another employer, maybe the consolidator or the trucker, where the union has a separate beef, right?
Right, right.
So the NLRB, they argued that the ILA, they were using those ship owners as this middleman to put pressure on the consolidators and the truckers, like, hey, give up that container work, or else it wasn't like they had a direct dispute with the ship owners over their own employees' work.
I got it. So the NLRB saying the ILA is trying to use those shipping companies as leverage to control work that's actually done by employees of other companies. And that's a no-go under the NLRA.
Precisely. And this brings us to a really important concept in labor law, the work preservation doctrine.
Right. Work preservation doctrine.
Yeah, yeah. So this doctrine, it recognizes that unions, they do have a right to negotiate with employers to keep work that their members have traditionally performed.
Right. So it's not like unions can never adapt to technological change. It's just that, you know, there are limits.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. There are boundaries.
Okay. So what were the initial ground rules? Like, what were the tests that the NLRB used to decide whether a union agreement was actually a legitimate effort to preserve work and not, you know, some illegal land grab for new work? What were they looking at?
So at first, the NLRB had two main criteria, two tests. First, the work in question, it had to have been done historically by the union members.
Okay, historically.
Right. And second, the employer that the union had the agreement with, they had to actually have the power to assign that work, to say who does it.
Okay, makes sense. So how did the NLRB apply those tests to the ILA's rules on containers? What did they find?
Well, they concluded that the container stuffing and stripping, it didn't pass those tests. I mean, when they looked at the historical evidence, it showed that this specific task, especially when it was done away from the pier, it was usually done by those consolidators and truckers, not the longshoremen.
Hmm.
And maybe even more importantly, the shipping companies, the ones who signed the agreement with the ILA, they couldn't tell those other companies, those off-pier companies, who should do that work.
Right, right. It was outside of their control.
Exactly. That decision, it was up to those consolidators and truckers. So, you know, based on those tests, the NLRB said, ILA, you're in violation of the NLRA.
Okay, so case closed, right?
Not so fast. The ILA, they weren't going down without a fight. They appealed that NLRB decision, and the case, it went up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit.
Okay, so they take it to the D.C. Circuit.
Yeah, and here's the interesting part. That court, they actually sided with the ILA. They overturned the NLRB's ruling.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they disagreed with how the NLRB defined the work in controversy.
Hmm. So what were they saying? Like, what did they think the NLRB should have been focusing on?
Well, they felt that the board's focus was way too narrow. Like, instead of just looking at that specific task of stuffing and stripping containers away from the pier, they thought the NLRB should have been looking at the bigger picture, the longshoreman's traditional job of loading and unloading those ships.
Okay, so it's like they're saying, hey, containerization, it's just a new way of doing that same fundamental job.
Right, exactly. So now you've got this disagreement between the NLRB and a federal appeals court. This is what we call a circuit split. Different courts, different opinions, and that's why the Supreme Court steps in, right? They want to settle this conflict.
Right, they got to resolve this.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the Supreme Court in 1980. Justice Marshall, he writes the majority opinion. What was the big takeaway, the key point that the court made?
Well, the Supreme Court, they ended up agreeing with the D.C. Circuit. They said the NLRB, they messed up in how they defined the work in controversy.
Okay.
Justice Marshall, he emphasized that the NLRB, with their laser focus on those specific off-pier tasks, they kind of missed the forest for the trees, you know?
Right, they got lost in the detail.
Exactly. The court said the real question was whether the rules on containers, were they a legitimate attempt to protect that traditional longshore work, that loading and unloading of ships, especially with this huge technological shift that containerization brought about?
Right, right. It's like you were saying before, the tools and the methods, they might have changed. But the core job, that fundamental job of moving cargo on and off the ships, it's still the same.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And there's this great quote from Justice Marshall's opinion. He says, the board's approach misses the point when applied to judge this contract between the ILA and ship owners. So basically, he's saying the NLRB, they got so caught up in who was doing what historically that they failed to see the bigger picture, how containerization had completely changed the landscape of longshore work.
Okay, so the Supreme Court, they didn't just say, hey, D.C. Circuit, you're right, end of story. They actually gave us this more nuanced way of looking at work preservation when we're dealing with technological change.
Yeah.
How did they clarify the test, the criteria?
Yeah, so they said the analysis, it needs to consider the relationship between what they called the pre-technology work, so the traditional way of doing things, manually loading and unloading, and the post-technology preservation effort, so in this case, those rules on containers. The key question wasn't whether longshoremen had always stuffed and stripped containers away from the pier, but whether the rules were a reasonable response to try to keep their essential role in that whole maritime cargo handling process, you know, given that this new technology threatened to make them less important.
Hmm, that makes sense. But we got to talk about the dissenting opinion, right? Chief Justice Berger, he wasn't on board with all of this.
Right.
What were his main arguments? What was he pushing back on?
Yeah, so Chief Justice Berger, he argued that, you know, fine, maybe regulating how containers are handled on the pier, maybe that's okay because it's directly related to the traditional shiploading tasks. But trying to control that off-pier work, that stuffing and stripping that had always been done by the truckers and the consolidators, he said that was overreach. He saw that as the ILA trying to muscle in on work that their members had never done before.
So he's drawing a line, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's saying what happens at the port, that's one thing, but what happens elsewhere in that transportation chain, that's a whole other story.
Exactly. And he was worried that the majority opinion, it kind of blurred that line and potentially opened the door for unions to say, hey, we should control all this work that's suddenly connected to our industry because of some new technology, even if we've never done it before.
Hmm. Yeah, I see his point. So the Supreme Court, they didn't actually say the rules on containers, they're legal, full stop. What did they do with the case?
Right. They remanded it. They sent it back down to the D.C. Circuit, which then sent it back to the NLRB.
Okay, so they kicked it back down the ladder.
Exactly. They said, NLRB, you need to take another look at this, but use the right framework, the one that focuses on the connection between that traditional longshore work and the ILA's efforts to adapt to this new container world and preserve their role.
Okay, so why should you, the learner, or anyone who's, you know, fascinated by how law, technology, and labor all intersect, why should they care about this case from, what was it, 1980?
Yeah.
What's the lasting impact of NLRB v. ILA? What makes it so important?
Well, this case has had a huge impact on how we understand the work preservation doctrines, especially in industries that are going through these rapid technological transformations. It really affirmed this principle that unions, they have a right to update their agreements and their strategies to protect their core functions, especially when new technologies come along and threaten to make their members' skills and jobs obsolete.
Right. But it also sets limits, right? It says you can't just claim any work that's now linked to your industry because of technology, especially if it's work that's traditionally belonged to other workers.
Exactly. It's about finding that balance. The court was sending a message to the NLRB. Look, you can't just get stuck in the past focusing on these narrow historical definitions of work. You got to look at the bigger picture, the context of these labor disputes, especially when technology is a major factor. You got to understand what's at the heart of that traditional work and decide if what the union's doing is a reasonable way to maintain that essence in this new world.
Hmm, yeah. So the big takeaway for you, the learner, is that NLRB v. ILA, it gives you this really insightful look into that dynamic relationship between technological disruption, what unions do to protect their members, and the whole legal framework that governs labor relations.
Yeah.
It shows you just how important it is to understand the fundamental nature of work when you're trying to make sense of these work preservation agreements in a world where things are constantly changing, constantly innovating.
And it leaves us with a pretty big question, you know, something to really think about. Like, how do the principles we've been talking about in this 1980 case, how do they apply to the world we live in today, right? I mean, we're seeing technological upheaval everywhere we look. It's automation and manufacturing. It's the rise of artificial intelligence impacting all sorts of jobs. It's the gig economy, right? All these fundamental questions about what is work and how do we make sure workers are treated fairly? How do we ensure job security in a world that's constantly being reshaped by technology? I mean, these are questions that aren't going away anytime soon, and they're definitely worth exploring further.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's something to ponder. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us and keep those brains churning.
Yeah, thanks for listening.